Hello and welcome to episode 201 of the Enough Podcast. My name is Mike Curley and I am joined as always, because it wouldn't be the same, but Mr. Patrick Roan.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
All right. Today we're going to move fast. Fast.
Listen to the snapping. Listen.
I got, yeah. Places to go, things to do.
I'm really hungry, too.
Yeah, you're really hungry, and I have to, my daughter's performance at the Circus Juventus, she, you know, we've talked about this before, she takes the kids' circus school, and they have their big spring and summer performances, and the spring performances are, you know, she's, you know, obviously in it, and so it's the tech dress rehearsal tonight, and so I got to pick her up early from school and get her into her costume, which is a sailor theme this year, get her on over there so that they can, you know, tech dress. Basically, they, you know, check the lighting, check the music cues, check the spots, everything else. It's basically like a dress rehearsal, but not just for the kids, but also for the and for the equipment, but also for the you know. And by the way, did you happen to? I know you haven't been on the path for a while, but I posted a whole bunch of videos to my path about taken at one of the shows, not the one that she's on, because there's three separate show teams.
I haven't looked yet. I'm wondering whether to go forth with Path.
Because of some of the issues, getting
a bit weird, and it's a shame because I think they're a cool company, but it's kind of getting a bit strange now.
They've made some unusual choices, but I'm still sticking with it. And I don't know. It seems like a nice place to share like little videos like that. I mean, because when I describe the circus thing, I don't think really people kind of get it. They don't really, like, they think, oh, it's you know, some cute little kid's thing, and it's real amateur, and, you know, no, you don't understand. This is a Cirque du Soleil-level professional performance that just happens to star kids, just happens to be amateurs, you know, kids. But everything else about the performance is done to the most professional standards. This is a full-blown 3-hour European-style circus show. This is the sort of thing that you would get by going to Cirque du Soleil. I'm not joking about this. And so to really kind of get that understanding, I mean, anyone wants to look this up on the interwebs, you know, you just go to Circus
It's in the show notes.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes, yeah. And you can get some idea of what this looks like and what this feels like. I mean, it's just amazing what they're able to do.
So much for moving fast.
And flying high.
Can I mention very quickly that the 70 Decibels t-shirt is for sale?
You certainly may.
With the rest of the internet. But the difference is, I mean, everybody, I think, who's... Well, anybody that has followed what we have done knows that I've planned to do t-shirts for a long time. I decided I wanted some to wear at WWDC, so decided to set up a Teespring. I actually set it up before, because Stephen Hackett, he did the first, I think, that then spurred Marco to do it, which then spurred Syracuse to do it, which then spurred the rest of the internet.
I have no t-shirt, just I want to put that out there.
So I had mine ready, but I wanted to announce it on the command space, but then realized if I did that, I wouldn't have enough time, so it went up for sale yesterday, Monday. It has been funded, so everybody that wants to buy one will get one. It's $15. There's no profit in there for me. I just wanted to make them because I know people want them. So I did it as cheap as I could get it and keep the quality up.
There you go.
$15 plus shipping. If you want one, go get one. This is the only time they will ever exist.
Yeah, Five has its own t-shirts.
Well, I could continue to do them forever if I wanted to. I just don't want to. I don't. This is for me the only time they will ever be made. Unless something crazy happens one day in the future, maybe our 10th anniversary. But I've bought six because I want loads and I want them to last me
for the future. Just a note, my friend. If one goes to 70decibels.com, there's nothing on there, not even on the blog about the t-shirt. Maybe you should change that.
Yeah, I forgot to blog post about it, because the official launch was going to be Wednesday, and then I didn't get around to it.
Yeah, do that, please.
So I will put it. I will blog post. Nobody really reads the blog, though. More people read my Twitter than they do the blog.
I'm just saying.
I will put it up. Saying. I'll put a link.
All right. Okay. So speaking of my little girl. So let me tell you, this weekend, I don't know how the idea got struck us. She wanted me to make her a paper airplane. And so I did. I made her a paper airplane because pretty much whatever she asked me, I do. That's just the way our household works. She runs it, right? And so I make her the paper airplane, and I make one for myself, and we kind of throw them around inside, you know, but it was a nice day out, a nice weekend. I said, well, let's go outside and throw these around. And so over the course of the weekend, we've spent at least 3 hours, probably closer to four, just outside throwing around paper airplanes, right? I mean, it's just, it was gloriously cheap fun, right? And I think we forget how cheap fun can be. You know, we think cheap fun is like some 99-cent game download on our glowing rectangles. But sometimes it's just folding up a paper airplane. It's grabbing a piece of paper and folding it up and going outside and just throwing it around. Not worrying about anything else, not paying attention to some phone or some TV screen or some news or anything like that, but just leisure, man. Yeah, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. Michael?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, when's the last time you did anything like that?
Lego?
Okay.
So,
all right. Just spend some time putting together some Legos?
Mm-hmm. After Christmas, I built the Millennium Falcon over a few weeks.
Nice.
That was nice. I mean, it's a huge model. I mean, that's definitely a thing that I like to do. But the problem with those, the little sets, is they actually take up a large physical space, so require some sort of storage.
Yeah.
I spent the day at the beach yesterday.
Oh, how nice. What beach?
Brighton Pier. We was on the pier.
Of course. Yeah,
so it was really nice. The sun was
gorgeous out. Beach.
Yeah.
Very nice. Over on Channel Side, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice. You can almost see France from there. No, I'm joking. You can't. But a little bit more global warming, and actually it'll be farther apart because the sea level is rising.
Mm-hmm.
In any case. And then on Thursday at lunch, my good friend Garrick and I, he plays this game quite seriously. He takes it, you know, seriously, like competes in tournaments and stuff like that. But it's a game called Kubb, K-U-B-B. And Kubb is sometimes referred to as Viking chess. But basically, it's, you know, these wooden blocks and these wooden batons, and you set them up in such a way that, you know, and there's a couple of teams, or, you know, it doesn't even have to be teams. It could just be one-on-one. Where you take the batons and you throw them and you try to knock over the other guy's cube blocks, and there's a strategy to it, and how you knock them over and setting them back up if you don't, you know, if you don't knock over three and things like that. It's really, you know, kind of interesting and strategy filled, but it's one of those games that's like baseball, and I don't know if cricket is this way, I forget, but basically, and this may resonate, because for a while I know you were a little bit kind of passingly interested in baseball, mm-hmm. but one of the things I like about baseball is the idea that it's entirely possible that in the right conditions, the game might never end. It could literally go on forever. And there have certainly been games where for instance, I remember a 21 inning game where the game lasted so long that they actually had to pick up play the next day. And Cube is very much like that. It's the sort of thing that under the right conditions, it could go on for a very long time, or it could last for like 10 minutes. Like, seriously, it's one of those sorts of games, and that's part of what makes it interesting. That, and when you combine it with strategy and kind of the planning and camaraderie, and the fact that it's kind of unusual and that it's played outside. I mean, there's just a lot of compelling things about it, so much so that we got to playing and he had an appointment to go to, and he completely, like, blew leaving for the appointment on time. Like, they had to call him, and he's like, oh, shoot, sorry, I'm on my way now, but we just got completely lost in this game.
Yeah.
Right? And all of this is just to kind of point out that I'm sure other people don't. I don't make enough time to just have pure leisure that I can just get lost in without regard for how much time it's taking or having to be anywhere or having something to do. Or thinking about, oh, geez, I better, Instagram this or, post this on Path or, let me tweet this picture of this leisure I'm having right now, right? Like, these are the last things on my mind or were when we were playing Cube and when I was flying paper airplanes. And I miss that. We don't have enough time for that anymore. We don't make enough time for it anymore. And I know I'm going to be better about it, and I think other people should too. So speaking of Legos, you've seen that little 512K Macintosh one, right?
Mm-hmm.
You should get one of those.
Steven has one.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so the only reason I didn't get one was because, they were like $70 and the shipping was like another 30 or 40 to the UK.
Yeah.
So it was pretty expensive. But I really do wish that I had one.
It kind of makes sense because the guy actually has to have those pieces custom made or something like that.
No, he just has to find them. Some of the pieces are very difficult to find.
Yeah, okay, that's what it is. And so, the price he charges is fair considering that this is not something you could just go out and buy from Lego or
actually can't get the original version that he did, which had a blue screen, and now has a gray screen because the blue piece is really difficult to find. So he's actually stopped. He has a new version of that now.
Interesting.
So
if you have that blue version, it's worth a lot of money.
I guess
I'm joking.
I'll put a link in the show notes to the guy's
store. It's really cool. You should just go look at it.
Power Pig is the name of the guy's store. So,
yeah. So talking about leisure, something else that's kind of been resonating with me lately, and that is this. On Minimal Mac, I posted a picture to, it was a reblog of I forget the name of the site, homescreens.tumblr.com or something like that, or Home Screen Project, that's what it is, homescreenproject.com. And, they post a number of home screens, but lately they've been posting a lot of internet famous people's home screens. And one of them was Jack Dorsey of Twitter and Square fame.
So weird. This is so weird to me.
I know. So I find it fascinating.
Shall I read to people what is on Jack Dorsey's home screen?
Yes.
So I've got it in front of me.
And keeping in mind that he's only got two screens. We don't know what's on the second screen. My bet is it's not a bunch of folders full of stuff.
So he has, I'm going to read sort of as you go from top left down to the bottom. Phone, reminders, clock, camera, maps, calculator, settings, photos, iBooks, newsstand, which has 5 publications in 2 newspapers, 3 magazines, music, videos, Twitter, Square Wallet, Passbook, Safari, Freeline, messages, mail, notes, calendar.
All built-in apps with the exception of the 2 that he is, companies he's personally involved with.
Even Twitter, though, it prompts you to download it when you sign in.
Yeah.
So pretty much just Square Wallet.
Yeah.
It's insane. He uses the phone as it comes. Who does that? And this is Jack Dorsey. It really, really surprises me. I'm very surprised by this. Very surprised. Yeah. When I saw it on Minimal Mac, I was like, this can't be accurate, but it is. It comes from the guy. He posted it to Twitter.
Yeah. Interesting other facts about Jack Dorsey. Jack's a really fascinating guy.
Yeah.
Extremely
very fascinating.
Yeah. Did you know that he only wears Prada suits and only has them in like particular colors?
Did not know that.
Yeah. And shirts and ties and, that's all he wears is Prada. And in a Steve Jobsian fashion, it's like one of the, or I should say closer to like Barack Obama. You know, Barack Obama like has two suits, basically. He's got a gray one. He's got a blue one. And he alternates between them. Because, he says, I've got enough things on my mind as president of the United States, leader of the free world. The last thing I need to worry about is picking what color I'm going to wear in the morning. I just grab a suit and I know that anything I have is going to go with it.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. And so Jack Dorsey is very, very similar in that regard. So he's kind of a minimalist to begin with, in certain senses of the word, in certain ways. So I guess I'm less surprised by only the built-ins home screen. And I would just love, I have no way of knowing how to get in touch with him get him to give me just 15 minutes of his time to find out what's his workflow, when he takes notes, he opens up notes and, I guess I want to know how's he using the built-in apps that's working so well for him. But it got me thinking a lot about final choices. I've written and spoken about final choices before. Final choices and sensible defaults. Final choices are to me those things that we have put a lot of long thought into, and then make a decision that we hope to never have to make again. The example that I used, I believe, in my post and maybe on the podcast when I've talked about it before, is I've got a pair of Red Wing boots that I know I will never need another pair of boots again. It's just that simple, that I know that these will outlast me if properly taken care of. And so I know, hey, guess what? I'm never going to have to worry about purchasing another pair of boots again because these will last forever, right? And it's not just choices like that. Recently, I got to talking with my wife about her car because her car is even though we just bought it about 3 years ago now, it's 2002 Audi A4 wagon, Quattro Sport, blah, blah, blah. Very nice car, but at this point it's 10 years old. And so, we were talking a little bit about, just about being proactive in general, because we naturally tend to think this way. When I got the Nissan Versa, I did a lot of research on cars. And even though the Versa was relatively new, I knew that based on my research that it was a 10-year car. I expect to get 10 years out of it. It's a 2007. We're currently at 5. It's perfectly fine. I know it will continue to be perfectly fine for at least another 5 years, assuming that I perform the proper, regular, standard maintenance on it and fix things as they need to be, as I've been doing. You know, that is to say that I know that I'm not going to in the next 5 years, or I should, I'm not going to, that I'm unlikely, much less likely to run into a repair that will cost more than the value of the car. And because I went into it thinking about, like, oh, I like this car because it's cool, or it's, you know, or it's, you know, I like this or I like that. My primary concern was I'm about to spend a lot of money on a car, something that will depreciate the moment I roll it off the lot, drastically, dramatically. I don't want to have to make this decision for another 10 years. So I was talking to my wife about, well, you know, what did she think about, you know, her car? And, you know, she says, oh, I don't know, another 5 years. I'm thinking, no, I'm saying 5 to 10. She says, yeah, I guess that would feel right too. In other words, the car she's driving now is a 20-year car. Assuming that we continue to get all the proper maintenance performed, which on that type of car is best done by, you know, a specialist. So you're going to, you know, you're going to pay a little bit more. But we're lucky enough that we have a wonderful, place in town that we take it to that really does. I mean, all they do is Audis. That's it. They don't do anything else. Right. If you bring in your Volkswagen, they're going to send you away. If you bring in your Toyota, they're going to send you away. If you bring in your Toyota with the Audi, they'll fix the Audi and tell you to use the Audi to haul the Toyota to the Toyota dealership. But, you know, having that kind of focus is important. And when you have that kind of focus, and you can really be a true specialist on a particular brand of car, it allows you not only to – it allows you to just plain, you know, excel at that and know exactly what needs to be done, as well as to keep track of problems like, you know, we generally see this at about this age and this model. So we should probably be preemptive and proactive by fixing this, right? And they're great. My bottom line is this. In order to make these sorts of final choices, in order to – and this is the reason why I'd love to talk to Jack Dorsey. My bet is Jack Dorsey didn't just get the phone, take it out of the box, and he's just too plain busy, you know, spending his, you know, billions of dollars on Prada suits to worry about finding apps. I mean, that's just ridiculous. My bet is he put a lot of thought into what he uses and why.
Can I just interrupt you very quickly?
Yes.
Because we had a great email, didn't we?
Yeah,
about
we did.
This topic. Would you? So I want to read that email and get your thoughts on it personally.
Yeah.
If that's okay. But I want to thank Squarespace first before we do that.
Okay, let's do that.
Is that okay?
Oh, that's perfectly fine. Thanks for stopping me.
I haven't destroyed you, have I? Because I felt like you were about to start talking about that email.
Yeah, I was on my way.
See,
yeah.
I know. I can read your mind.
We've been doing this for 201 episodes. I would hope you can by now.
I think that's how these things work. So let's take a quick moment to thank Squarespace.com, who give you absolutely everything you need to make an amazing website. Squarespace is a fully hosted, completely managed environment that allows you to create and maintain a beautiful website, blog, or portfolio. It doesn't matter how experienced you are with building websites, you can put something online in just minutes without having to worry about hosting, scaling, or integrating with other services like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Flickr, because they give you tools to do that. They also have fantastic commerce solutions. Squarespace Commerce allows you to start selling digital and physical products online very, very easily. You can integrate a fully functioning store into your Squarespace site and start accepting payments. You can manage your inventory, process customer orders, and much, much more, all with Squarespace Commerce, which is absolutely fantastic and is available on any Squarespace site if you sign up for one of their business plans. All Squarespace sites come with beautiful themes. They're beautiful, as I say, very clean, and they feature responsive web design too, so they look great on any device. is that they have a drag and drop page building system called Layout Engine that makes it really easy and fun to create pages. Their structure is great, and everything is integrated from design, domains, hosting, and support, which the support is 24/7, award-winning. They have great statistics for your website, so you can view your visitor information. They even have iOS and Android apps, too. There's no credit card to try out Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/70decibels, and you can sign up for a free trial there and find out more information. Squarespace plans start at $10 a month for their standard plan, $20 a month for their limited plan. If you sign up for a year, you'll get 20% off. If you sign up for 2 years, you'll get 25% off. You pay those up front. And if you use the code 70decibels, and the number 5, that's 70DECIBELS5, you will get an additional 10% off your first order. So go to Squarespace now, squarespace.com. They give you everything you need to make an amazing website.
Amazing.
Amazing. Right, so let me read this email from Joshua Wald. Joshua says, I've been listening to the Enough podcast. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Joshua. You mentioned ideas for future shows. I consider myself the anti-app guy. I have installed hundreds of apps, but if they don't hold up to regular use, they're gone in a few days. For me, an app has to be extremely useful to keep around. With that said, the ones I have kept on my Mac and my iPhone are pretty darn useful. Anyway, I'd love to hear you guys on a similar vein. So I guess maybe that's what Jack Dorsey does. Thank you, Joshua, for sending that in. So, Pat, what do you feel about this? Is this something that you try and prescribe to?
Yeah, well, what's interesting? So yesterday on the app.net, because that's apparently where the rich geeks hang out, and they're all rich because all they do is download I don't know hundreds of dollars worth of apps, replace the default apps with them, without barely even looking at the default apps. I'm guessing I'm joking about all of this, but not really joking that much. So I put out a thing. I said, thinking about final choices when it comes to apps, both Mac and iOS, what do you consider like final choices, like apps that you hope you never want to have to think about replacing anytime soon, right? And, got tons of responses of, great apps. I probably got a good 100 responses to that at least. Plenty of great apps on there. I was really surprised how few of them were the built-in apps. And I really wondered to myself, I wonder if Apple is bothering to ask those questions. You know what I mean? For so many years, Apple did such a good job of, Sherlocking, as it were, other apps. If those for not familiar with that term, basically, if you had a pretty good app, you could almost be guaranteed that Apple was going to take half the features that made it cool. Basically, we're going to cherry pick the best features out of your app, put it into its own, and then kill you. Basically, just kill you. Just make you irrelevant, right? And that they did that on the Mac a lot for a long while. There's dozens of examples of this, but my take on it is I wonder why they haven't done that, especially given the market with the App Store. And maybe that's it. Maybe they would just be kind of biting off their own tail. It would seem to me it's like, people seem to like SimpleNote over our built-in Notes app. What is it about SimpleNotes that makes it great that we can then incorporate into our Notes app and make it as good? You know what I mean? Or, people tend to like OmniFocus versus Reminders. What can we do with Reminders that's going to make it better than, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or at least, maybe they can't make it into OmniFocus, but they could certainly take a lot of the things that make OmniFocus compelling over Reminders and bake some of that stuff in. Just saying. There hasn't been a lot of effort on iOS put into improving a lot of the stock apps, I don't feel. At least making them competitive with what's out there for people to buy. And maybe that's because what they're looking for on iOS is a kind of general purpose, just enough approach, right? That they want to not only encourage that sort of development in the app marketplace, but also that they're not really concerned about power users. They're concerned about, you know, the average user who I would be willing to bet takes their phone out of the box and doesn't change it that much. Might download a few apps, but not really. And I know some of these people. Some of these people are my clients, right? And they too use, you know, basically what's there, and wouldn't even download anything unless I told them, oh, you should try this versus that, and here's why, and this is the reason why it's better. But otherwise, they would never go looking for that information on their own. So, yeah, I guess I was surprised on the Mac, though, even more so, because there's several of the built-in apps that, I mean, are kind of, I would think, would be final choices for some people, right? Like, I've got a good friend who, you know, is a Unix guy who came to the Mac just mainly for the hardware as it was. And, you know, for him, terminal, you know, the command line, as it were, is a final choice. You know, for him, it doesn't really matter. It's not so much that he's using a Mac as much as it is, you know, and he fires up the Mac and he fires up terminal and that's all he needs. Inside there, he has VI for his word processing needs and text editing needs. Inside of there, you know, he can, you know, get his email and stuff like that, all within terminal. Read, respond to it, all within terminal. You know, because all that stuff is right there available at the command line. And so then further, it got me thinking about whether or not apps could really be final choices with the way that the speed with which technology changes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what really is the lifespan of a notes app? You know, what is the lifespan of a read it later app? You know, what is lifespan of an OS, right? And some OSs have longer lifespans than others, right? You know, Unix has a particularly long lifespan in the grand scheme of things, but, you know, it goes back to 1970. You know, would choosing Unix now as your kind of final choice of OS, is that going to have any meaning 10 years from now? Who knows? And yeah, I guess that comes back down to what a final choice is anyway, right? That there are certainly going to be some things for which you can make those sorts of final choices that last a lifetime, right? Examples being, you know, the home I live in has served at least four generations of people. Properly maintained, it will continue to serve many, many more. You know, assuming that, you know, nothing else intervenes. In other words, you know, if we decide to stay in this home until we die, that's like an entirely, like, that's like not even a question of possibility. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we know that this home will last for another 100 years. And so if it will last for another 100 years, it'll last for another 50. Right. And, you know, obviously you can't necessarily make that with a car. I mean, yeah, I suppose you can, but at a certain extent you're going to, you know, I mean, certainly you could point to like Model A, you know, Model T Fords that are, you know, driving around that are, you know, certainly would have outlasted anyone who bought it originally. But to maintain that car today would be in a very expensive proposition and likely more than the car is ultimately worth. Right? And so really, you know, is that the same sort of thing? But certainly that car, a car, any car, is likely going to outlast an app if properly maintained, right? You know, I mean, just you don't have enough fingers and toes to count the number of apps that have, you know, have come out and then been dead within a year, right? Whether bought by some other company and shuttered, or, you know, developer just not able to keep up and maintain it, or, you know, some life event coming into play and not, you know, or even just playing something else better, bigger, faster, more compelling, whatever comes along. And so, I don't know, I'm thinking about a lot of these things, mainly because I'm thinking about how the choices we make today can either be 5-minute choices, or 5-year choices, or 50-year choices. And that you can have that range within anything, right? Whether we're talking about cars, whether we're talking about pens, whether we're talking about apps, you can have that range within anything, right? And so, you know, what are you looking for? Are you looking for making the best choice for right now, for today? Or are you looking for making a choice today that has reverberations for 20, 30, 50, 100 years down the line? I can tell you which one I'm more interested in. Because the less choices I have to make, the less I have to worry about what, you know, buying a new car or buying a new house or buying another app, the more I can fly the paper airplanes, the more I can spend my lunchtime playing Cube.
Sounds good. I think we may have wrapped up.
Yep, that was it. So, where can people find us is, I guess, the next step.
So I want to thank very much our fantastic suggestion from Mr. Joshua Wald.
Oh, certainly.
And people can suggest us in a few ways. Twitter and app.net. I am iMike, I-M-Y-K-E. Patrick is P-A-T-R-I-C-K-R-H-O-N-E, Patrick Roan. Email Pat as well. He likes to receive email, maybe even more than I do. That's Patrick at patrickroan.com. That's a good place.
You got it. Yep. And of course, the still up for the time being, the 70 Decibels contact form, 70decibels.com/contact.
Yep. We are slowly moving things over now, all over to the 5x5 podcasting mega empire that we are helping build. But yeah, that's it for episode 201. Thanks for being here, Pat. Thank you all for listening. We hope that you'll be back with us next week. We will. Yes, we will. Cheers.